Hi, this is Scott Kirby. Welcome to the Midwest Music Hour. On today's program, I'll be sharing the music of The Dead Horses with you and a special conversation I had with the lead singer-songwriter Sarah Voss. We chatted earlier this year about a plethora of subjects. I personally am such a fan of The Dead Horses and I'm really captivated by their music, so thanks so much for tuning in to this exclusive interview. Now, as I tell most of my guests, it's more of a casual conversation than a seriously formatted interview. And so we begin with the topic of literature. This is my interview with Sarah Voss of The Dead Horses, right here on the Midwest Music Hour on WXPR.
I've been reading this book based on a kind of a documentary series from Joseph Campbell. Have you ever heard that name before?
I don't believe I have.
He was this kind of famous guy, like, for philosophy and comparative religion and specifically, like myth and mythology.
Okay.
And anyways, it's this beautiful, beautiful book, and he talks about, not really all of the religious traditions, speaking about how birth and death are linked, and you need birth for death, and you need death for birth. And that has always been a very consoling idea for me. You know, everyone kind of can interpret that differently, like from a broader perspective, knowing that birth and death are one cycle. And you know, on a more spiritual level, like, I really believe that nothing ever really, like, truly dies. It just, it evolves, it changes,
yeah. You know, being beings of light, you know, energy doesn't ever go away. It's, you know, it's just transferred.
You know? Exactly. Yes, exactly what I mean.
It certainly, certainly follows that same, you know, concept in that regard. You know, ending and new beginning. What is that, a semisonic sound? Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end, right?
Yeah, that's the closing time song.
Yeah, closing time, man.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You and Adam Gruhl used to play a lot together, and what was that, the Rucksack Revolution?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as well when we came up to Rhinelander and played, and you played as well, right?
It was epic. I was wondering if you guys get a whole lot of chances to play together anymore.
Yeah, it's much less often and much more difficult to line things up, because it used to be that we were at a lot more of the same festivals and we could try to book something in there. Or, you know, I was living in Oshkosh for a while, so I was only, you know, just over an hour away from Adam, so that made it easier. But it's a little bit harder now that I'm in Milwaukee and I'm also touring a lot more. But, you know, I would love to, like, really spend more time working on the material that we do together and open to that happening, you know, if our lives kind of shift again. They're always shifting, and maybe they'll align a little bit better once again. But, I just appreciate his friendship so much, because, you know, like, I remember them before they used a condenser mic. As I get a little bit older, you know, I'm like 30, but like, you start to appreciate the friendships that have, your friends that have seen you go through different stages in your life. That starts to mean a lot, and that's certainly how I feel about him.
It's really cool to see where you guys are at and what you're doing, the music that you're making, the places that you're going. It's really awesome. So congratulations on everything, you know.
Thank you very much.
When's the cover coming, you know? The Rolling Stone cover. What are you getting on the cover of the Rolling Stone? The Rolling Stone. Get my picture.
Okay. Yeah, right. When is it coming, Scott? So
we found out that my wife is pregnant.
Oh, congratulations.
She's going to be due in November.
Cool.
And
congrats.
Thank you.
That's so incredible.
It was, you know, yeah, I think she was probably, you know, when you guys were up here and we were hanging out, she was probably pregnant then and just didn't know it, you know. Yeah. Like, life is moving along, you know. Okay. So anyway, like, California, like Colorado, Red Rocks with Trampled by Turtles. Mm-hmm. You're going on this cruise in February next year with, like, Jason Isbell.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I can't hold you. I know, that is going to be something else. Like, it just that doesn't even feel real. And it's, you know, and it's so far away, but it'll come really quick.
Yeah. Is this going to be your first time at the Red Rocks amphitheater out there?
It'll be our first time playing. We went there, gosh, almost, it might now be just about 2 years ago, when we have just started touring nationally, and we were supporting Elephant Revival, and it was the end of our run with them, but we had to be back to Wisconsin for a show in Green Bay, but we decided to stay for their Red Rock show just to watch it, and then drove straight through the night from Denver to Oshkosh for a show.
Oh, wow.
But we did see them play there. It was them and Josh Ritter and one other band. I forget who that was, but it was just absolutely incredible. It's such a really beautiful venue, and I don't think that it's lost on anybody, you know, where they are, and you're under the stars, and you can see the city, you know, kind of off in the distance, but you're just sitting in these red rocks. And, yeah, to combine, you know, nature, which is, it's such a broad word, but it's so important to me. It's so moving to me to combine that with music is really, like, the best. You know, the only thing that can make it better is if, like, you know, everyone that I know and love was there.
In the arms of a lover, in the arms of your son, you lay your breath heavy, you're not anyone. Won't you stay for a while, won't you rest yourself? You know it ain't such a shame to have lost yourself. You know it ain't such a shame to have lost yourself. Breathe in a bottle of cheap red wine, all my sacred sins and all your dirty lies.
This kind of, you know, being on a project with a band, it's really interesting because it's such a, there's so many different, you know, moving things involved within the band, and you're always, you know, you're continually striving for, like, the next step, because there's certainly kind of, you know, a sense of urgency to keep growing and to grow exponentially and just reach more people and have more experiences and this, just having this outrageous appetite for life and experience. But, you know, we find ourselves, you know, the core of us dead horses, we just have to, we try to stop ourselves and acknowledge, you know, the blessings and the success that we do have and celebrate them when you have them, because it's really easy to just take all of that for granted, you know, and be thinking about what you want to achieve next. Or it's not even, you know, it's definitely not just achievement with music. That's kind of an incorrect word there. But, you know, to set the goals that you're trying to reach, which is fun. It's fun that it's never ending. It never gets boring. It's always challenging. But, yeah, trying to kind of, and I think that's a great lesson for everybody, you know, just stop in your tracks and really be thankful for what you have. You know, I think about where we were at, you know, a year ago versus today, or even versus 6 months ago, and it's so hard to even imagine what, you know, what life is going to bring in the next year, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's exciting.
You know, enjoy every sandwich. Who's that? That was, criminy.
I know that one.
Werewolves of London. Who did Werewolves of London?
Don't know that.
Oh. Criminy. I'm going to.
Werewolves of London.
He's a, yeah, Werewolves of London, the song,
criminy?
You know.
That's so good. I'm feeling that.
Criminy?
Feeling that. Yeah. So good.
You're not familiar with that expression? Are you?
I am, but I don't know the last time I've ever heard anyone say it. It went under my radar. The first time you said it, and now I realize it, and it's what a great, it's like a fake curse word, you know, like people say it on the radio, and it's really not offensive at all, but it's more polite than saying like, or, you know, stalling with some other word, so yeah. I'm going to use that, Scott.
Fantastic. Warren Zevon. Warren Zevon, have you heard of him? No.
I don't think I have.
You know, kind of right up there with all the other guys, sort, you know, in the, you know, in like the Tom Petty category, Bob Dylan, Neil Young,
oh, sure.
You know, that whole like cluster of folks, and you know, coming up alongside like the Allman Brothers and
okay,
from,
I'll have
from
to
London or something.
I'll have to check them out. The name does sound familiar. I always tell people too with me, I'm like, you gotta fact check me. You gotta fact check everything.
Check all them facts out there.
It's so hard because you have conversations with people, especially conversations where you're kind of like, you know, roving around intellectually, whether you're talking about even current events or maybe stuff in history. And, you know, so you're really reaching far into your brain, and it's very easy to be mistaken about something.
Oh, absolutely.
So I always try to say, you got to fact check me. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but if it was, you know, what about this?
Yeah.
What about that?
Holes in my shoes, and there's a light inside of you I can't quite recognize. There's cracks in the sidewalk, children swimming in the leaves I can't quite recognize. Oh, you know, let's lay one low in the alley where we used to meet. Oh, you know, let's take it slow. There's room to grow, and there's room to grow, there's room to grow. Suffering. Oh, you know, my darling dear, there's a light that takes away our fear. Oh, you know, my darling dear, it's okay to be happy here. It's okay to be. Thank you. are such suffering. Tell me what you think. Think we're born to live in love and count the endless stars above while we're here. Oh, you know, my darling dear, there's a light that takes away our fear. Oh, you know, my darling dear, it's okay to be happy here, it's okay to be.
You know, I can't use American Pour because you got in it, you know.
Yeah.
Criminy, criminy, Sarah, criminy.
Exactly. We do have some radio edits of that. We can, of any of the cuss we've done.
Oh.
My Mother the Moon, if you care for those, we're happy to send them to you. That was kind of a funny scenario in itself because we were rushing to get these edits, and it's like, you know, so we had our producer bleep it, basically, but not really bleep. Like, it's actually this whole art form. Like, how do you take cuss words out of a song? And
yeah.
You can include this on the interview because it's kind of interesting. So we go to our producer and we say, hey, can you cut this word from the song? We want radio stations to be able to play it still. You know, we really firm believers and supporters and supported by radio stations like yours, Scott, and so we don't want them to not be able to play these three songs, I think, on My Mother the Moon that had words that are not allowed on the airways. So he said, oh, sure, I will work on this and then send it back to you, and then after he does that, you actually have to have that track remastered as well, and then you just have it a digital format, and we didn't print any physical copies with the radio edits. So that also meant that when we sent, you know, and we sent like several hundred CDs of My Mother the Moon to radio stations, and we had to sit and put stickers that said all three different cuss words, which I'll let you imagine what those sounded like. And the stickers had that on it, and we had to stick a sticker on, you know, I mean, I think there were over 500 or something that we sent out, you know, like a sticker on every single one, and then, you know, stuff like a press release and into a bubble wrap. And oh, and you had to open up all the CDs so you could put the sticker on it just so that people knew not to play those tracks on the air. And it created so much extra work that I don't think I will ever swear on a track again because it just created this incredible amount of work, and it costed us money too.
Oh.
And I remember our manager warned me while we were recording. She said, like, you know, maybe you don't want to swear. And I was kind of like, you know, my ego, like, you can't tell me what to write. You know, like, I'm the artist. I'm going to cuss. That has been shamed and humbled out of me, which is a good thing.
because it's a really poignant part of the song, Sarah. I mean, it's in there for a purpose, and it's
true.
It's to, you know, make a point.
You
know,
yeah,
and
right.
It does. It's like an apex of that song. You know, I was like, you know, laying in bed with my wife last night, listening to it, and it's like, I can't use that now. I probably.
We'll get you. I'll make a note to send you the edited versions. And then that was the other funny thing, because we were in this rush, the deadline, and the producer, our producer Ken Coomer, who is just fantastic, he sends us his edits, and it's like what he did. Okay, so the tricky thing about this was that the way we recorded My Mother the Moon and Cartoon Moon, we did live vocals. So for My Mother the Moon, for example, Dan and I sat in the same room. Dan's an upright bass player.
Yep.
And we played the bass, like the foundational tracks for the song. So he played bass, mic'd. I played guitar, mic'd, and I sang. And so my vocal really wasn't isolated from the guitar. So, for example, if our producer just pulled the vocal of me swearing, it would still be coming through the guitar mic very distantly, but you would be able to hear it. So that was kind of the issue. He couldn't just completely silence the cuss word. So he did this weird thing where he spliced the word and then maybe turned it backwards or something. So when we're listening to the edit, and we're hoping that, like, it's just not that noticeable, but it's like, God, there's a Tom Petty song where he does that too, where the way they edit the word, and it might be like a word like joint or something, but it's just more noticeable than ever, you know? Like, it's like coming up to this climactic part of the song, especially for our song, which is a little more serious.
Get to the point, let roll another joint. You like that one?
Yeah, and it's like, I think that might be the song I'm thinking of, is where it's like, it just sounds like they inverted the word, so it's like, more, you know, it's more noticeable than if you had just left it as is. And we really didn't want that on our song because we thought it sounded ridiculous. So then we're going back to Ken and we're saying, Ken, like, can't you do something else here? And there's this whole, you know, like, science to bleeping cuss words. You know, you can just bleep or, like, silence just part of the words, but you can still tell what the word is, but it's not saying the full word. And it was definitely a debacle of sorts. But I'm happy to send you the edited version so you could indeed play those songs.
I would love that if I could do that.
I honestly, I swear a lot, and I need to maybe adjust that a little bit.
There's a new generation of poor. Faces clean and their eyes are pure. Empty stomachs, but their mouths are full. American proud, American poor. Send you a free book every year. Discount for your diagnosis, dear. They give you pills to take away your fears. American poor. Left my innocence in the sea, with all the things that I make believe. Shadow thing, and it's just me. Make believe, make believe. People are working silently, sweating in their own salty sea. Now they're setting fire out in the streets. American proud, American poor. Left my innocence in the sea, with all the things that I make believe. Shadow thing, and it's just me. Can be no greater thing than to love a stranger. There can be no greater thing. American proud, American poor. We treat the people who serve us like there's nothing would ever really come of it. It's fair when you say it's fair. That I make believe.
Yeah, so if it's okay, I got a little list of things. So the first one is, who are some of your favorite songwriters?
Favorite songwriters? Well, Paul Simon, I think he comes up for me quite often as just being this incredible songwriter. He's still putting out great records. I just love him to death. More current songwriters, I would say, big fan of Sufjan Stevens. I recently discovered a woman named Laura Beers. She's from out on the West Coast, and she did a record with Nico Case and Katie Lang. So it's this, you know, powerhouse, three women, and they toured on it. And that's actually how I heard of Laura Beers, because I had known Katie Lang and Nico Case, and I'd never heard of Laura Beers, and I started listening to her records and just really fell in love with the songwriting and the arrangement, so I couldn't speak highly enough of her. But again, you know, also big Bob Dylan, Tom Sand. A lot of times I'm realizing, too, things that I didn't like before, whether it's in music or even in food or any taste, they evolve as you get older, and there might be things. I've been hearing some Elvis songs lately that have made me want to dig deeper into that kind of realm as well, but It's endless. It's an endless vast of things that you can experience and seek out. And I love that about life. I remember when Bob Dylan, it wasn't that long ago, a few years ago, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Yeah.
And I read his speech, and it was, what I got out of it was really what he was trying to say is how, you know, all music and all art is an interpretation of other art. So, you know, of course there's blatant abuse of that where you're just like purposefully stealing something, or it's so similar. It's like, why should you profit from this? But, you know, back in the day too, like it's like a lot of his songs were old traditional folk songs, and then he would put his spin on it, and then that made the next thing. And, you know, I always think of that famous few verses in Ecclesiastes talking about, you know, everything is dust in the wind, and it's all repeated from elsewhere. It's a cycle, I think, and, you know, and then ironically, you know, the birds did that song, or no, the
Kansas.
Birds did turn, which is also from that, but yes, Kansas did dust in the wind. There's so many songs that come from that book of the Bible, and it's so fitting because that book is kind of saying there's nothing new under the sun. You know, that's one of the verses. And I used to think that was utterly depressing, and I no longer think that. I think that's kind of reassuring to know, you know, that we're all part of the same. And like we were talking about before, sometimes the tragedy, you know, the sadness of the loss of a loved one, knowing that birth and death are in the same cycle, and that nothing ever truly dies.
A question about your songwriting process, drawing on from experiences, drawing from other inspirations, other aspects of life. Is there, you got a songwriting routine or not to, you know, I mean, not to like disclose
any secrets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want you to give away your secrets, Sarah, but you know, it's like 1:30 in the morning with, you know,
whiskey,
a cup of coffee and whiskey and whatever, you know, it's like, I don't know. Is there, do you have to be in a specific, you know, place or a mood or something like that? Or can you write in the van going down the road?
Generally do when I'm working out the songs. I do prefer to be alone and kind of not distracted by anything. But I certainly have ideas, and like when we're driving and I'll jot them down, like often in my phone. There has to be part of the process where I feel like I'm just kind of connecting to like subconscious or maybe even like collective conscious. I really do believe in that. I think part of it is just reaching deep down and kind of having something come to the surface that maybe you weren't aware of. And when that does happen, it does feel like magic, and something kind of pops out and you're like, whoa, that's spot on, and you know it's good. You know, and it also evolves when you're playing it with other band members or when other band members kind of, you know, sometimes the way that, you know, Dan brings in his bass, whether it's percussively or he'll have an extra melody that he wrote to the song, that can certainly influence what happens within the song too. So there's a lot of different things, but more than anything, I want the songs to be, you know, honest and deliberate and make people feel moved. And whether that's moved in a way that's intellectual or emotional or spiritual, you know, I don't really care, but that's kind of what I'm looking for when I'm listening to music. I want to be moved. Advice I would give to anyone who's trying to write, like, you know, you make it part of your it's a practice, just like practicing guitar or an instrument or practicing yoga. You just do it, and the outcome is not the important part. It's the process that is the important part. That's a hard thing, you know, because of course I'm sitting there writing songs and I'm thinking, like, is this going to be good? You know? That's not the right mental place. The better mental place to be, in my opinion, is, you know, not even considering that at all, and just kind of, like the other day, I was writing a lot last week, and I spent, you know, like a whole day trying to work through the song. And then, like, the next day, I was, like, still working on it, and then I just kind of was, like, noodling around for a little bit, and, you know, like, 3-chord progression ended up writing this, like, song that, to me, feels just so much more moving than the other one that I had spent a whole day on. I haven't given up on that one yet, but the other one is just so simple, and everything just kind of popped out, you know, probably in like 10 or 15 minutes. And of course, yeah, I'll work with that and refine it, and again, like, bring it to the table with Dan and then others to try to shape it. But it's odd that, or it's just interesting that one song just kind of peeped its head, and I don't think it's going to need that much revision, whereas the other song that I spent a whole day on, I think, needs a whole lot of work.
In regards to Dan and whatnot, I had written this this phrase this way, and I'll use my slick radio voice. The band has gone through a few different personnel changes. You and Daniel being the rock-solid pair, what does the stage lineup look like these days?
Why have you not been talking like that the whole time?
Because it's public radio.
Yeah, I hear it. No, your natural voice is very great for radio. The lineup, we're actually kind of working with a lot of different things at this point. And, you know, I used to feel like we can't, the band can't change at all. Like, we need everybody the same. And it was kind of this, you know, if you can picture like a closed fist as opposed to like open palm, that was kind of my feeling about that. And we have lost different members throughout the years that this has been a project. You know, and this project has seen many different faces. You know, we were once a band that played for free beers. You know, we would get 4 Miller Lights and 1 Bud Light. And that's what we would play for. You know, and now we're nationally touring and hopefully internationally touring soon. But losing members, I used to think was, and it was it's a very, very difficult thing because the people that you're playing with, it's such a close bond and close relationship, and we've all gone through so much together. But now I'm very much embracing the fact that we can kind of evolve and be different. And I think that I'm hoping that for the, you know, the people who come up to our shows, that it's, I hope it's kind of fun for them too to see us in different arrangements. So currently, we're doing some things as a duo, like Big Top Chautauqua. We'll be playing that, just me and Dan. So that's upright bass and guitar. And we're doing some things as a trio, which is usually me, Dan, and Ryan Ogburn, who plays bouzouki and mandolin, as well as electric guitar. And then, you know, our big long spring tour that we just got done with, we did as a 4-piece, which were those 3 prior mentioned instruments, as well as drums, which personally I really love traveling that way. But it's very fun to just do different things, and it really keeps you on your toes, and it keeps us busy practicing when we're at home and working on new stuff. And so, yeah, if you're gonna see us, you know, it's show like Big Top Chautauqua opening up for Charlie Parr, you can do that as a duo. And we're even playing with some other musicians this summer as well. Yeah, it's a challenge, but it's pretty fun.
How do I spend my many days with all my restless ways? Got me feeling so strange. Paintings in a cave. How do I spend my youthful days? They think I lost my way. Every day we change, life's a messy maze. Spend my number days. Can't you see we're all the same? I'd like to rid myself of shame. That would be the day. I know we're gonna win. Yes, I know we're gonna win. I spend my human days. She said, just don't lose faith. Well, that would be the day, babe. Yes, that would be the day.
The microphone that you use is a pretty unique looking piece of gear. And can you talk just a moment about that?
Yeah. Yeah. And we, so again, and we love to use this microphone when we're a trio. It seems to work the best. And the one that we're using is called an Ear Trumpet Lab, and it's the Myrtle. Ear Trumpet Labs is a company based out of Portland, Oregon, and they hand make all their microphones, which is pretty sweet. Within kind of our genre of music, I'm starting to see more and more people using these microphones. They're really high quality, and again, it's not like a giant company that you're buying from. It's a smaller one that's making things that are very high quality, and again, made by hand. With the Myrtle, it amplifies, the whole stage space. So it's almost as if you are amplifying an acoustic sound, and it makes everything sound a lot more authentic to as if you were just to amplify, again, like this acoustic live sound. So like if we were all sitting in the same small room together, but you can use that pretty well in nicer rooms and just make that loud for everybody. So it feels a little more authentic. There's more complications that you can face using that because it does pick up so much more sound, so it's much more likely to feedback. But we've been experimenting with different things with the condenser mics, and we'll continue to do that. I really like using them. It's much different than using, like the standard SM58 for microphones, and you need a sound engineer that knows what they're doing with them. There's a lot of different techniques you can use. But also, I think part of the fun part about watching people using condenser mics is, the dance that happens, especially if it's, more than one person singing. You're coming into the mic when you're singing or when you're singing softer and you're backing off. And when there's harmony parts between three people, you're all crowding in together. And I think that brings us kind of a physical, more tangible aspect that's fun to watch from the audience's perception and also from mine as well. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I don't think you guys use that at Nicolet College.
I don't think we did. Generally, it's hard to use with drums.
Yeah.
Because although, our drummer is a very, very, very quiet player, so we probably could use it with him. But at that point, we are using also like electric guitar, and just everything's a little bit louder, and that's hard to do with the condenser mic.
Oh, Myrtle can't handle all that noise. Wants it quiet in the back.
Good old Myrtle.
Good old Myrtle. Criminy.
Criminy.
Your guitars. Have you always played a Martin? How did you get your hands on such a beautiful instrument, Sarah?
I've had the Martin for just since last March, so just over a year. And before that, I was playing a Washburn Dreadnought guitar. My Martin is an SM20, or I'm sorry, an OM21, which means it's a little bit smaller than a Dreadnought, not a crazy amount smaller. When I bought it, a few interesting things to say about that. Like if you're playing, out and you were touring a lot, and I've had people ask me like, what guitar should I get? And, if your budget is not super high, especially, the best advice I could give is get a reliable guitar. But the most important part is making sure that the guitar is set up well. Like you could spend, just as much money getting it set up by someone who knows what they're doing and putting in a nice pickup. You could spend the same amount on those two things combined as the guitar itself, and you're probably going to be very happy with the sound that you're getting. And now, a Martin's going to last a really long time. It's going to sound nicer and nicer as time goes on. And it's still going to be worth something, at the end of the day. But in terms of functional use, using something like a Washburn or an Ibanez, there's a lot of other guitars that, if you're on a budget, I would say just, make sure that you get a good pickup put in there. And I'm actually not. I'm going to put a different pickup in my Martin. But it's not always about, a fancy brand name. It's oftentimes about how it's built and the equipment that you have inside of it if you're going to be playing out live a lot.
Absolutely. Good to have that reliable equipment, the right tool for the job.
Yeah, it's got to feel right, and you kind of just know then. And that's how I felt about this one. But yeah, would love to have more guitars. Kind of work towards that.
A whole room full of guitars, like Vince Gill. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be starting the Kickstarter for that next week, Scott.
Fantastic. I'll send you a dollar. I'll get you started.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Being out traveling around is exciting and wonderful, and it's got its ups and downs. And I wanted to see if you'd be willing to touch on just like maybe what the hardest thing about touring is for you.
Sure. I'd say maybe, I don't know if I could say the very hardest, but obviously, you know, missing family and relationships and feeling, you know, like you're just gone, like you're just cut out of the equation for, you know, sometimes months at a time, several times throughout the year. But there's a flip side to that. The flip side to that is that when I'm home, I'm my schedule is way more flexible, you know, which is really cool. But certainly, you know, personal relationships, that's probably the hardest thing. But also just things like not being able to cook for yourself, you know, being able to do your own dishes, being in your own bathroom, having privacy at all, doesn't really happen on the road. You're either in the van with your bandmates, or you're at the venue with your bandmates or talking to people, or you're in a hotel room with your bandmates. And we all are pretty respectful of each other. And the van time is actually usually kind of almost like a sacred space. Like you are, I don't know if they would call it that, but I would. We kind of leave each other alone, and I usually have earbuds in, and I'm either listening to music, which I love because I really explore a lot of different things, or podcasts, or trying to, like, expand on my education and taking advantage of the time in the van to do that. But, yeah, not a lot of privacy. I do a lot of walking when we're on tour. And because you can do that, you know, like running would maybe be more efficient, but then you need to shower or something. We get to the venue, we load in. If there's like half an hour, I just go walk. And then you get to see the places that you're going a little bit more to. So yeah, it's kind of, obviously you get tired, but it's this weird thing. Like sometimes I think it's aging us all faster. But at the same time, I feel like it's keeping us young, too, because you don't get stuck in your kind of like your grooves of monotony, and it challenges you to just keep moving with the pace of life. And, yeah, it's exciting, and I think you got to do it when you can do it. And we are, you know, blessed to be working with a really great team of people as far as our manager, who is, you know, a really big part of what we do, as well as our booking agents and publicists. Everybody's really great. So we're blessed with, you know, these really wonderful opportunities to be touring this way. And I just, you know, I try to just keep in mind how thankful I am that I have the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to be slowing down anytime soon, Scott.
It's just been amazing to chat with you today, Sarah. So thank you
so much. It was really great to talk to you, Scott, and congrats on the pregnancy. Very exciting.
Thank you very much. We're
it's gonna be a dad.
November, so
I really want to make baby onesies that say, well, probably not dead horses, but maybe just the DH symbol. I think that would be so cool.
Well, you know, you got one sold if you come up with them. So
cool.
Well, hey, you take care, Sarah, and appreciate you.
Thanks. Thank you. Likewise. All right, well, we'll talk soon.
No matter where I am or where I've been, join the working class. And I just want my work to last. Tell me now, is that too much?
Thanks so much for tuning in to this special edition of the Midwest Music Hour. We heard songs from Dead Horse's latest album, My Mother the Moon. We heard Turntable, Darling Dear, American Poor, My Many Days, and A Pedal Here, A Pedal There. More on Sarah Voss, Daniel Wolf, and the rest of the Dead Horses at deadhorses.net. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time for more of the Midwest Music Hour with your host, Scott Kirby, here on WXPR.